Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, with the passing of Don Everly, we remember the Everly brothers, Don and Phil, who got their musical start in Shenandoah, Iowa, and rose to superstardom. We also have some rare audio of Don Everly performing on KMA Radio in 1950. We will hear that in just about a half an hour. But first, Byron Davis, better known as BK Davis, is a Steinway International artist. He has toured the world and performed with artists like B.B. King and Billy Preston. He's composed hundreds of original jazz tunes, and he got his start making music at his father's church in Davenport, Iowa. These days, he makes his home, at least some of the year, in Burlington, and this is one of his compositions, Duck Creek. BK Davis is on the line with me now. Hello.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
And I want to start by going way back in time to when you were a kid. When did you first fall in love with music?
Well, I kind of think it was always there in my family. My mother had a grand piano in the living room in Davenport, Iowa, and folks from the church would come to Davenport or to Rock Island. We had a church over there as well, and a lot of times choir rehearsal would be right there in the living room, and so I grew up around it.
So it sounds like your mother was quite the musician too, is that right?
Well, yeah, she's a great singer and a good pianist. And in fact, my first exposure to piano was actually just sitting next to her on the piano bench and listening.
Did she actually teach you how to play piano, or was that something you needed to go outside the home to learn?
Well, she actually taught me. There are certain progressions musically, you know, that are very integral to the foundation or blueprint of music and songs. For example, with blues, many times you'll have three chords in some blues songs. And for example, in the key of C, it might be a C dominant 7, F dominant 7, G dominant 7. With those three chords, you know, you might play any number of songs. So, basically, my mother exposed me to the dominant sevens, and I took a liking to it and dug in from that point.
Well, and, you know, I mentioned that you made music in the churches that where your father was a pastor, but your mom didn't just expose you to religious music. She was a big jazz fan, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, in a huge way. I mean, in the house, there was always John Coltrane playing or Miles Davis or, you know, all of the great jazz artists, but not only musicians, but vocalists as well. You know, Etta James, Aretha Franklin, Nancy Wilson, and just, you know, the entire spectrum of American music, pretty much. It was what my diet was.
All right. So you were definitely exposed to the best of the best during those years. And you did make music in your father's churches. And you were even, by the time you were 12 years old, you were writing songs and conducting the children's choir. Tell me about that.
Yeah. A lot of the folks I listened to, I dealt with, who came through our churches, a lot of the people were musical directors and they would write songs, and you know, at 12 years old, I was writing songs, and I attended at 12 years old. I was at Washington Elementary School in Davenport, Iowa, which is on East Locust Street, and I had written a song, and we had a talent show at Washington, and at 12 years old, and I just somehow won the talent show because I had written a song. All the kids loved it. That propelled me to become 6th grade student council president.
Wow.
So that was that was amazing to see how much the kids loved the music, you know.
Yeah, do you remember the song still?
I don't. It was about something about the moonlight and a girl's hair, you know, the moon reflecting, reflection of the moonlight off of a girl's hair.
Wow.
This kind of stuff.
You were a young romantic.
I don't remember. I was.
Oh, I love that. So that that experience of performing and meeting with that success, how do you think that changed you and made you think about making music?
Well, it definitely impacted me because I did not know that outside of the church, I didn't know, you know, people would, like, you know, go for the music like that. And once I had that experience, I just started writing more. We were in church 3, 4, 5 times a week, and so, you know, becoming a musical director at some point in the development, that threw me into not only writing, but you know, you have to learn hundreds of songs, and then you have to learn hundreds of parts in order to teach the choral sections their parts, and then the lyrics are endless. So this in and of itself is intense training.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's the choral harmonies, the progressions, just everything, the modulations, key changes, and sometimes simple songs, you know. But usually with the music I was educated on, it was pretty involved, to be honest.
It sounds like it. You know, I've got a couple of teenagers at home, and you're talking about this, and I'm trying to imagine you at 16 or 17 years old handling all of this in addition to going to high school and growing up, and that's pretty extraordinary. Did you start thinking, hey, I could make music as an adult? This could be my career?
Not until I was an adult. I remember very vividly playing football at Davenport Central, and in the summertime we would have what we called two-a-day practices, and we'd practice, I guess, 7 o'clock in the morning, 8 o'clock in the morning for a couple hours. Then after the sun went down, we'd, you know, meet again and practice again. Not after the sun went down, but after it cooled off.
Mm-hmm.
We'd meet again and practice, and some of those days, my dad and mom would pull up, you know, next to the football field and say, hey, beep, 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 you gotta go to choir rehearsal. So those are some of the things I remember, Charity.
Yeah, that was a little bit of push and pull there, it sounds like.
It was. I did not want to leave the football field, but, you know, that's just how it was.
Right. Well, so you actually went into the military after high school. So that doesn't sound like you were heading in the direction of a musical career at that point.
I was not. And the military kind of gave me a nice break from music, even though I always kept a guitar in my wall locker. And I just always played. I did not have a piano, of course, but I always played guitar, and in fact, I've got a guitar right now next to the piano.
Nice.
And so I still play regularly. Yeah, the military was a nice experience and nice exposure to other lands and people and cultures and things like that. But after the military, I mean, I had to make a sound decision at that point what direction I would go with my life. And that's when I decided it would be music.
Well, let's find out more about that in just a couple of minutes, but I want to play a little bit more music right now. And we're going to play a little bit from a recent composition of yours called Mango Juice. As we start this, do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. Mango Juice was inspired by someone, a friend of mine, who I cared deeply about. And the melody just came to me. I wrote that on guitar, and I thought it was playful, and I enjoyed it. And the lyric simply said, "Your kiss sweeter than mango juice, and yes, sometimes I get greedy. Your walk has got its own little dance, and yes, sometimes it gets jazzy. Your face, beautifully dusky, quaintly husky, and yes, sometimes I get greedy." And that's the lyric.
Yeah, why don't we listen to a little bit of Mango Juice?
Okay.
Listen. Your kiss sweeter than mango juice. Ooh. And yes, sometimes I get greedy.
Mango Juice by Byron B.K. Davis. We will continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we will remember the Everly brothers, Don and Phil. Don Everly just passed away on August 21st. Phil passed away in 2014, and they got their start in Shenandoah, Iowa. Right now, I'm talking with another musician who got his start in Iowa, growing up in Davenport, Iowa. Byron Davis, better known as BK Davis, is now a Steinway International artist. He has composed hundreds of original jazz tunes and traveled all over the world performing, and he is on the line with me now. And BK, just before the break, we were talking about how when you were in high school, you actually became the musical director at your father's churches. You were doing some really intense and really complicated musical work. And then after high school, you joined the military. So although you kept that guitar with you and you never really stopped playing, what was it that made you think, I need to try making music professionally?
That's a good question. And, you know, just like all young folks, as they move through life, like when you go to college, you take either a specific study or you take liberal arts or, you know, whatever. And I wanted to do something specific with my life, and I decided a long, long time ago, at an early age, that it would be music. You know, so I would just throw myself into it, and along the way, here in Iowa, and again, my dad, mom had seven churches, and one was in Rock Island, Illinois, Macomb, Illinois, Galesburg, Kewaunee. I can't remember where they all were, but that was a part of my training, and all of the friends and family, not only from the churches, but even the folks in Davenport, the local school teachers, all of my friends, the neighborhood folks. It seems like it's been a journey all by myself, but the truth is, it's been the entire community that has really, you know, put the wind into my sails, mm-hmm. and allowed me to go.
When you did decide that you wanted to make music as a living, as a career, did you immediately know that jazz was the kind of music that you wanted to make?
Well, no. And even to this very day, I'm not sure whether it's jazz, to be honest, Charity, because I find myself writing all the time in different languages, in different styles. For example, if you Google one of my songs called Let Me Comfort You, I have a friend from Russia named Natalia Stiko, where in the first part of this song, it's a duet, in the first part of the song, I sing it in English, and then Natalia comes with the second round of the music, and she's singing it in Russian. Well, that's neither jazz nor blues nor pop. It's that particular composition is, I would classify it as R&B. The first, the opening song on the Invisible Secret concert show, and that's on Google also, or Facebook. That's more like rock, you know. And so I've got a bunch of stuff. I've got music in Spanish, one called Esta Noche Hay Una Fiesta, which is more Latino, Latin type of music. So, you know, I would like to say that I compose jazz, but it's not really. Much of my music has a Latin rhythm and a beat. For example, I just wrote a song yesterday called Lady in My Dreams. That's a samba. And so in my catalog, I have several sambas, bossa novas, claves, and I have a few R&B compositions. And I have one, a song also you can hear if you go to Invisible Secret concert April 10th. I've got one called Something Warm, which talks about how cold it gets here in Iowa in the winter. Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of like my tribute to Iowa, sort of, you know, but it's called Something Warm. And I just write all kinds of music. In fact, Charity, as I look over my life, I think about the days when I lived in Indianapolis, Indiana, and I wrote jingles, commercials, TV and radio commercials for ASA Productions. As a staff writer, I would get all types and styles of commercials that needed to be produced. And so that's where I had the opportunity to try my hand at just the entire spectrum of different kinds of music.
When do you think you really found your own voice? Because obviously, if somebody is giving you an assignment, you know, compose something that fits into this or meets these standards, you could be a chameleon and you could, you know, use your creativity to make what they needed. But when do you think you found your personal voice as a composer?
That's a real good question. You know, back in the 90s, I remember I did a couple of albums, a couple of records, sacred music, and I had not really found my voice. It's just not until, I guess, over the last 10, 15 years where I really am comfortable, not only as a composer, but also as a vocalist. And then once I write the song, I bring my band together and you know, we flesh it out and it just all comes together beautifully, as you just heard with Mango Juice. But if you Google the Invisible Secret, BK Davis Invisible Secret concert, you will hear over 25 songs. One of them is on YouTube, another one is on Facebook. One is April 10th of this year, and the other is November 7th of last year. But I don't know if you could actually see a lot of similarities in the compositions, because I like to think that they're unique and different.
So when you say in the last 10 to 15 years, that also coincides with when you became a Steinway International artist, because that was in 2012. So it sounds like you were really coming into your own when that happened.
Good observation. I never looked at it like that, Charity. Yes. At that time, my band, the BK Davis Quartet, we were headlining in Tampa, Florida at the jazz at the Fox Cool Jazz Club on Kennedy Boulevard in Tampa, Florida. And we headlined for 2 years, 2.5 years straight. And I was at the club, must have been what, 5-6 nights a week, just doing music. On the weekends, my band would join me. And it was incredible. It was incredible. There was Greg Smith on guitar, Glenn Meyer on drums, Don Dean on bass, and me singing and playing piano. And Tampa being a destination, a tourist destination place, it was just packed. The club was packed with people from all over the world, just constantly. And in those days, we were not doing original music. I mean, we would from time to time, but it was more about, you know, what the people wanted to hear, what's familiar to the public. And then we just rode the wave, so to speak.
I'm talking with Byron BK Davis. He is a Steinway International artist. He grew up in Davenport, Iowa, and makes his home in Burlington, at least some of the year these days. And tell me a little bit about how it came about that you became a Steinway International artist. This is an incredibly prestigious elite group of musicians, and if you look at the list of Steinway International artists, you will recognize many, many names of just incredible musicians that we all know and love, and it's an incredible opportunity for an artist as well. How did it come about for you?
Well, down through the years, around the globe, I have performed and or recorded on Steinways in different countries. And at one point I was in Naples, Florida, having a conversation with a friend of mine who owns a Steinway piano gallery. And he said to me, he said, "My gosh, you know what? You know, it seems to me that you would have all of the credentials necessary. You have original, you know, you have a large body of original compositions. You have a large body of recorded music. and you've worked with a lot of notable people, it seems to me you would be a shoo-in at becoming a Steinway International recording artist. And I said, yeah, well, okay, what's the process? And so he said to me, well, you have to go through Manhattan, and you put your package together of your recordings and your bio and, you know, a lot of stuff like that. And you send it into Manhattan, and then they will vet you globally. And it just so happened, Charity, that I did have recordings from different places around the world that I saved. I had video and I had audio, and I turned it in to our headquarters in Manhattan. And it took a while, you know, because I was like biting my nails waiting to hear, you know, it's like, I want to know. And after about, I think 4 to 6 months, I got a letter, a welcoming letter in the mail. And yeah, it moved me. It moved me to tears. And so that was an amazing moment. And from that point, I began to perform what I called a Stevie Wonder tribute concert, where I did 90 minutes of Stevie Wonder music, which is also incredible training for songwriting and singing, because every day you have, you know, you're doing 90 minutes of his music, and, you know, the music burns itself into your mind. And so then when you begin to write your own songs, that it just comes through. Not that I sound like Stevie Wonder, because I don't think. Not that I write like Stevie Wonder, because I don't, I think. But what it is I found my voice, my style, and my signature through studying the music of other people.
Wow. Interesting. So, and how did becoming a Steinway artist, how did that transform your career? I think, although, like I said, we know many Steinway artists. We may not know that they are Steinway artists. And of course, Dan Knight is a favorite here on Talk of Iowa, who's been a Steinway International artist for many years. But how does that change things for you as a musician?
Well, the biggest change that I can speak of is that whenever I would make a call to go do a concert, the answer was almost always yes. You know, and as far as letting the public know, the house was usually pretty packed. Mm. I remember on one occasion in Houston, Texas, packed out, Dallas, packed out, Plano, packed out. I forgot the name of the place in Philadelphia, but whenever I decided to go perform, doors have flown open for me. And people attend. The audience, the attendance has been very, very good.
Wow, that sounds incredibly powerful. And you've been doing a great deal of composing and performing. And we only have about a minute left here. But I would love for you to tell me, when you compose, you're incredibly prolific. Where do you go in your mind when you write music?
I go to the message. I go to the essence of what I'm trying to convey. For example, the song I wrote yesterday, Lady in My Dreams, came about, my friend, you know, she said, my friend BC, she said, well, you know, hey, man, you were dreaming. What's this dream you're doing? And so this informed me that I was dreaming. And she said, well, you're dreaming about a lady. And I got up and went to the piano, and I said, Lady in My Dreams. And I began to compose, and It was about, I guess, the lady in my dreams. But it's a story. It's just a short story, you know, about what happened. So that's how the process is with me.
How do you maintain the energy to create so often and so much?
I don't know. That's funny. I was telling my friend BC this morning. I said, hey, you know what? I'm just writing. It's just pouring out of me. It's pouring out of me profusely, and I don't know how to turn it off. And she said, well, don't turn it off. Just let it flow.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Well, we are going to go out here listening to your love lullaby. And BK Davis, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're welcome, Charity. Thank you.
Byron BK Davis is a Steinway International artist. He grew up in Davenport, Iowa, and now lives at least some of the year in Burlington, Iowa. He has composed hundreds of jazz compositions and compositions of other styles as well. Coming up in just a moment, we'll remember the Everly Brothers. This is Talk of Iowa.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Don Everly, who along with his brother made up the rock duo The Everly Brothers, passed away on August 21st. He was 84 years old. His younger brother, Phil Everly, passed away in 2014. And the sweet harmonies of The Everly Brothers helped to shape early rock and roll. They influenced generations of musicians. They had 15 top 10 hits in a span of 5 years, and they were among the first group of 10 artists to be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1986. Their first hit was Bye Bye Love in 1957. The musical careers of the Everly Brothers began in Shenandoah, Iowa, where they spent their formative years. And Bill Hillman, director of the Everly Brothers' childhood home in Shenandoah, is here with us now. Hello, Bill.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And the family, the Everly family, actually went to Shenandoah, Iowa because of an opportunity to make music. Can you tell me a little bit about what brought the family to Shenandoah?
Well, the digging for coal down in Kentucky didn't sound very good to Ike Everly, their father. So they headed north through Chicago and to Waterloo and eventually landed their first job here in Shenandoah at KMA. At that time, we had two big radio stations that were heard all over the United States, KMA and KFNF. They got a job on that, and eventually they were a family show. And so the Everly Brothers started performing at the early age of preschool.
Wow. So Ike Everly, he was the musician in the family, right?
He was at the time, yeah. He'd learned from the same person that taught Bill Monroe how to play guitar. So he goes way back and very, very well known in the country western genre at the time, and was the reason that they got to Shenandoah incidentally, he played right-handed, and both his boys were left-handed, but they couldn't afford another guitar, so both boys learned how to play guitar right-handed.
Oh, wow. So, and this was a family that was struggling when they got to Shenandoah, Iowa, which is pretty clear if you visit the Everly Brothers' childhood home. Tell us a little bit about the house that they lived in while they were in Shenandoah.
Well, it was pretty meager existence to be a radio entertainer at the time with two radio stations and about 100 radio entertainers in town of the 5,000. They didn't have to pay that much. So, but they did increase their pay Ike increased their pay when they added his wife and two kids. And so they went up in pay. They probably made beginning $25 and probably up to maybe $50 a week. So, yeah, it was pretty meager existence. They lived in a one-room house, and I don't mean a one-bedroom house. I mean a one-room house.
Wow, and the brothers talked about what it was like to live in that house, did some reminiscing about it. They didn't have a bathroom, of course. A lot of people didn't back then, but so they were using an outhouse, and they had, a bathtub made out of canvas?
Yeah, Phil remembers a fold-up bathtub that was made out of canvas, and it leaned against the back door. And when they took a bath, they heated the water up on the cook stove and the heating stove, which was the same thing. And that's how they took their bath. So they moved up in life a little bit. Yeah. But you know, back then, really that was not uncommon back in the 40s and 50s.
So. You mentioned that they brought the kids and Ike brought his wife onto the show and the kids as soon as they started performing. So really, the Everly Brothers got their start on KMA Radio, but they got their start in an effort to help their family make a little bit better living, huh?
Exactly. And there were other people that do that. The Hayden family was their competition at the time, and they brought their whole family in. There was more like six or eight of them, and out of that group came Charlie Hayden, the world's best jazz bass player. So there were a lot of people that got their start that way. It was a hard way to make a living, but you know, talk to any musician and they'll all tell you it's a hard way to get started.
Right. Well, and you actually gave us a little bit of audio from 1950. This is from October 30th, 1950, and this is a little bit of audio from their radio show, The Everly Family, and both Don and Phil Everly performed with their father on weekday mornings from 6 to 6:30 in the morning?
Correct, and then after that, they would do their paper route, and after that, they'd go to school.
Oh, my goodness.
And then they also had all school activities afterwards, so.
Wow.
Yeah, they're pretty active boys.
Well, let's listen to just a little bit of this audio. Again, this is from October 30th, 1950. We can hear Don Everly on this audio.
Here's the microphone right up here.
Good. I'll sail my ship alone.
Don talks a little low and he's a little bit away. Sail my ship alone.
Don Everly had a very sweet voice. Again, that was audio from KMA Radio in 1950. So through the years, Bill, they kept performing on the radio, right?
Yeah, they clear up until when they left here in 1953. They had a radio show, half an hour show every day. And sometimes they'd flip between stations, KFNF and KMA. But and then after their after school or after basketball or whatever, then they would have they would go out on the road and do concerts and stuff with the family. And one of those groups was called I can't remember right now. Oh, the Hawkeye Rangers. I was just looking at their guitar case here that I happen to have in my office. Hawkeye Rangers. And so they would go around and do hootenannies, that kind of stuff.
How did they get discovered?
Excuse me?
How did they get discovered? I mean, they ended up recording and having a number one hit in 1957. So that happened to them fast.
Well, luckily, Ike knew Chet Atkins, and Chet saw him hanging around the Grand Ole Opry, and they got on the Grand Ole Opry, and of course, at that time, they were thought of as country, because rock and roll really wasn't anything yet, you know. So they merged rock and roll with soul, and they're one of the, for lack of a better word, they're maybe one of the 10 people that invented rock and roll. So, and the, like you mentioned earlier, they were the first inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and the only one still living from that inaugural group is Jerry Lee Lewis. So.
Well, and they left Shenandoah. They didn't even graduate from high school in Shenandoah, but they spent this really important chunk of their lives, really their formative years, and I know they have honorary degrees from Shenandoah High School. Did they come back to Shenandoah ever, Bill?
No, their children are all coming back in about 3 weeks, and grandchildren. But no, they haven't come back since 1986, is when I had them at a concert here at my restaurant.
Oh, wow. 1986. I'll bet that was a pretty big deal when they performed then.
There were about 8,500 people here. It was a pretty iconic rock and roll concert for anywhere in Iowa, let alone in a small town of 5,000. And it made a connection with them and with myself, and we've stayed in contact with scholarships and became friends over the years. So
nice.
It was nice to be able to be included in their life and to see how great of people both of them were, and we really miss having that.
Yeah.
Connection now.
Well, I want to bring Shelley Warner into the conversation now. She is marketing director for the Shenandoah Chamber. And Shelley, hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. And Shelley, give me your perspective. What does the Everly Brothers home and their legacy mean in Shenandoah?
Well, I guess I have to say, it kind of puts Shenandoah on the map to a degree when Bill Hillman helped us get the Everly Brothers Childhood Home moved next to our historical museum. It gave a physical place for people to come and visit and remember the music. And so I think for Shenandoah, it does bring people to town, which is good for our economy. But most of all, we get to enjoy hearing the music. And with annual concerts and events, that's been made possible. But also, just any fans who want to come and visit the childhood home, we have a touch screen there, and we've produced a little documentary, and they can learn about or just remember the history and the music of the Everly Brothers.
And do people come from all over the world? I know that they had just an incredible fan base.
They do. I mean, because they toured the world, they still have fans all over the world. And, of course, we get visitors from the UK, and really all around the world, I have to say, and the United States, of course. So that's fun, to get to meet people from different places. And like I said, it kind of puts Shenandoah on the map. And it's all tied into our history with the garden nurseries and the radio stations, which were, started by the nurserymen. And so it kind of keeps Shenandoah's history alive.
And Shelley, Bill already mentioned that there's going to be a remembrance coming up in September. Can you tell me a little bit more about what's happening?
Every year we have an annual ShenFest celebration, which often has included some Everly Brothers concerts and music. We also have a Heritage Day the third week in June that we also have concerts. But this year's kind of special because it's Shenandoah's 150th anniversary, the sesquicentennial, and we have a theme of generations past and future. And so this year, we especially are happy to welcome the next generation of the Everlys. And Don's son, Eden, has been a performer for quite a long time, and he's played with a lot of greats from his father's era, and still does. And so we're going to have a concert on September 25th, 7 p.m. at our high school auditorium, and he's going to be joined by some people from his own band. I think Stephen Dibbs Preston is what Eden calls rockabilly royalty. And then also the Killer V's will be playing, and they are the sons and nephews of Bobby V, who was big in the 60s and knew the Everlys.
Oh, wow. Well, and Bill, obviously the Everly Brothers became your friends. You have a personal connection with them. You've also dedicated a great deal of your time to preserving the history of this family and their music. In thinking about the loss of Don Everly and Phil Everly back in 2014, and knowing that, of course, there are a lot of young people who may not know their music, what do you want people to know and remember about the Everly Brothers?
Well, some of their most popular songs were in the 50s, and they don't really, to younger people, they may not understand them, but they had a second career that started again in the 80s. It was a lot more contemporary music, and music written by Paul McCartney for them, and music written by other famous artists. And so younger people can listen to that type of music, but they can also understand that before the Everly Brothers, there really wasn't rock and roll, and they influenced everybody from the Beatles on down. And in fact, the Beatles were known as the England's Everly Brothers at one time.
for a little while.
So if they listen to rock and roll at all, this is where it started, and this is our history.
All right, and whenever you hear a nice, tight, sweet harmony like the Beach Brothers, and you listen to Simon and Garfunkel, that comes from the Everly Brothers, right? The Beach Boys. I'm sorry, I said that wrong.
they both. And those groups and hundreds more all say that they were influenced by the Everly Brothers. But, of course, nobody had the harmonies of two brothers like that could sound like one voice.
All right. And it all started in Shenandoah, Iowa on KMA Radio. Bill, thank you so much for being here today.
No, it's an honor to be on your show.
Bill Hillman is director of the Everly Brothers Childhood Home and Museum in Shenandoah, Iowa. Shelley Warner, thank you.
Thank you.
Shelley Warner, marketing director for the Shenandoah Chamber. And we're going to go out, of course, with some music from the Everly Brothers. We are remembering Don Everly, who passed away on August 21st. His brother Phil passed away in 2014. They made up the rock duo, the Everly Brothers. Dream, they had 15 top 10 hits in a span of 5 years.
Dream, 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 when I want you in my arms, when I want you and all your charms, whenever I want you, all I have to do is dream. Dream, 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 when I feel blue in the night and I need you to hold me tight.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.
Dream, dream, dream.